Mic going in and out?
No.
Okay. Sound? Okay, cool. Sweet. All right. Thank you all so much, so very much for being here. My name is Tyler Sonicson. I'm a stand-up comic locally, but that's not why I'm here right now, per se. I'm here to, on the invitation of, I want you guys to go absolutely insane for this woman, Moxie Easton. She is the founder of The Feast, and she asked me if I wanted to interview Kevin, and I said, absolutely, this would be an honor. And she says, I want to be your Ed McMahon. And I said, cool, okay, we'll make that work. You can be my Andy Richter, Ed McMahon, whatever sidekick you want to be. Her questions are going to be much more insightful than mine. I'm telling you that right now. But for those of you, everyone in the room, we've established that you're all very familiar with Kevin's work, with obviously Kids in the Hall, his voice acting and stuff. But this will give us a chance to get to know him a little bit better, maybe catch you guys up on a little bit more trivia and about Kevin's career and so forth. And I'm very excited to be able to bring this man to the stage. One of the people who is, and Moxie referred to this earlier, one of the people who I think, as much as anyone who's out there now, is responsible for the current state of comedy, the current state of comic, like sketch comedy, surreal improv comedy, the whole gamut. Someone who has made amazing contributions across the board for the last 30 plus years of comedy, and a very big influence on many of our development as comedians. Please, once again, put your hands together and make some noise. Kevin McDonald. Yeah.
I'll pay for the water.
You know who you remind me of?
Who?
Some guy named Hair Asshole.
Yes.
Yeah, you do. You look a lot like him.
Remember the Flaming Lips bass player when he had hair like that?
Check. Okay. The Flaming Lips bass player has been bald for like 30 years.
Yes. This was like for a brief period in the mid-80s, 85 and 86, he had crazy hair.
Oh, right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Because they've been together forever.
On a priest-driven ambulance, that era, right?
Yeah. Yes!
Okay, so...
Another thing about the Flaming Lips.
Yeah. Okay, so I have to ask you your opinion on this. Soft Bulletin or Yoshimi Battles of Pink Robots?
Ooh. All right. I'm going to take this question seriously, so I'm about to bore everybody. But I'm going to be boring. Soft Bulletin is a better album, but Yoshimi has better individual songs.
Oh. That's a very politically correct answer. I think we can get behind
that. 33% of the audience can get behind that. Those of us who were in college when Yoshimi came out can totally get behind that.
Better individual songs.
Better individual songs. Just for the record. So Wayne Coyne, if you're listening.
But Soft Bulletin is a better album.
Absolutely. So... I talked to you a little bit about this before the show. I was in L.A. last month, and I had the chance to do a show with Scott Thompson.
Never heard of him.
He was this guy, Canadian, in the 80s. I had a chance to talk to him for a couple minutes before he got into character as Buddy Cole, which he did. He's doing a new Buddy Cole like act right now. Scott Thompson is in L.A. and touring with the new Buddy Cole act, which is amazing.
He has like 8 Buddy Cole stories, and he does like 2 hours of Buddy Cole.
Does he really do 2 hours of Buddy Cole?
Yeah, it's supposed to be an hour and 20, but he but he mistimed it by 40 minutes.
Wow. All right.
But I was thinking, like, you know, it was crazy for me watching Scott Thompson, like, walk up and down, like, in character as Buddy Cole before the show, like, running his lines. And this is a character I grew up watching. And I started to think, what was it about that era of, especially, like, seeing the influence of Kids in the Hall and, like, how relevant it still is like 20 plus 30 years later, what was it about like that, like the late 80s, early 90s era in sketch comedy you think that has like stayed so persistent?
I think one lucky thing that we had, again, I'm taking, these are serious questions, so I'm not going to be funny. I think one thing that we were lucky about was that there was no YouTube. We couldn't film stuff, and so we had to do it the old like vaudeville way. And we had to, write everything ourselves, of course. A lot of troops, there were 3 or 4 troops in Toronto that didn't write anything themselves. It was sort of like Elvis Presley, and we thought we were like the Beatles, that we started writing our own sketches. And we had to get like our stage legs. So we performed all the time. If we weren't performing in front of live audiences, there were two or three shows a week that we could perform. We didn't make any money, but we could perform in front of audiences. Then we were the other days we were doing workshops, which was performing. And I think I don't know if that's exactly your question about the times of the 80s and 90s, but the fact that it was before like internet and YouTube sort of forced us to strengthen muscles that aren't strengthened. Now, I was just saying this, people on YouTube now, sketch troops, they strengthen different muscles. They know how to be filmic, and they know how to write for film. They understand cut two right away. But they're probably not as strong performers because they never had the chance. I don't know if that's the answer to your question, but that's the way I answered it.
Oh, absolutely. I think, why do you think the characters in particular, like many of the characters that the kids in the hall had, Buddy Cole being an example. Even like I just opened up YouTube and it had the waiter with no hands sketch.
I like that one.
Yeah, 25 something, 30 years later.
Yeah.
What was it about the sketches that the five of you wrote? Do you think that's like why do you think like those characters and those ideas and those jokes have been?
All right, I'm gonna keep it serious. I think that we somehow found a rhythm in the troupe that was halfway between absurdism and real. Whereas Buddy Cole was sort of real, but his jokes were absurdist. And the waiter with no hands was absurdist because who would hire a waiter with no hands? But it was real because the guy had real pain that he had no hands. And I think us finding that that balance between absurdism and real was kind of different. Monty Python was just absurdist. Saturday Night Live was probably more real, like in the early days, and we sort of found that balance, I think.
And when
sorry for the serious answers.
we'll get them back. Don't worry, Kevin.
I can tell the masturbation fire story again.
So
it happened more than once.
That's amazing. What was it that like? This is a question I like to ask someone who's been in comedy for a long time, especially like coming up when you did. Was there anyone that, especially in like Toronto at the time, that you thought was, oh, they're so brilliant, but they've never really gotten their due, that they've never necessarily made it their way?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, it was an amazing time in Toronto in the 80s. I was kicked out of college for acting after 3 months because the dean of the acting college said I was a one-legged actor. Oh, but he was a one-legged actor. He had he'd actually lost a leg during a production of Pippin. Because a lighting grid had fallen on his leg. So he was limping around me in his office telling me that I was a one-legged actor. But I went to Second City Workshops, and as I've been saying all week, everybody in the workshop were like actors over 35. There were two teenagers, me and a young guy named Mike Myers. And it was both our first workshop. And I had this gunfighter theory of comedy because I grew up in a suburb 30 miles away from Toronto. And so not my heroes on like Woody Allen and Richard Pryor and Steve Martin, but people I knew in real life, I was the best gunfighter. There was nobody funnier than me. And then I went to Toronto, and almost like my first day in Toronto, I meet Mike Myers, and I thought, oh my God, this guy could like outdraw me. He was like the best. And then he was so good, he was the only second teenager ever to be hired from Second City. Catherine O'Hara, the mom in Home Alone, she was the first. He's so good. He was good, as good as he is now, he was good as 17. I was just a lumpy potato of potential. And so I stayed in the workshops, but my first class, without Dave Foley, who comes in, without Mike Myers, who comes in, Dave Foley. I've said this story a million times, but we did the, and I'll answer your question better in a second. Everybody was split in twos, and we were doing the mirror exercise, where you mirror each other's movements, and it was supposed to be like just a serious thing. We hadn't even talked to each other, but we had chemistry right away, and we kept like going lower and lower to the ground, until we were both like lying on the floor. And then we both crawled outside of the theater. And then we crawled down the sidewalk. And the teacher was looking out the window, getting really mad, telling us to come in. And then later at the end of the class, we were split in three groups, and I had a really good improv, and he had a really good improv. We both knew that we were funny, and I went over to him. I didn't know his name yet, and I asked him, do you want to join my troupe? I didn't have a troupe. And he said yes, and I had to call my friend Luciano Casimir. We got to start a troupe. I got a guy who's as good as Mike Myers. But to answer your question, well, first, there's another second before I get your question. There was Norm MacDonald was around that time. I thought I was going to make a big list of people. But there was someone called Sean Cullen, who did almost make it to stage. He was in he had a few Comedy Central specials, and he was on Jay Leno. And he's a genius. And he definitely made it, but he's more known in Canada. But there were lots of people. There was Tim Sims, who was almost in the troupe. Four Kids in the Hall, there were four of us. And Mark McKinney wanted, Scott Thompson wanted an actor for some reason. And we wanted a guy named Tim Sims. There's nothing funny about this, why am I going on? But Scott Thompson kept coming to the shows and jumping on stage until finally we let him into the troupe. But it was an exciting time to be a comedian in Toronto. I wish that we remembered more. Norm MacDonald, Mike Myers, well, the kids in the hall, and there's someone else I'm forgetting.
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be, and feel free to, like, if it comes to you within the interview, just shout their name out. Yeah. In the middle of a sentence about something completely different, you can feel free
Russell
to...
Russell Baczynski!
No, nobody knows him. Nobody knows him. Sorry.
I'm going to look him up. So jumping ahead a little bit, by a little bit, I mean like 20
minutes. Wait a second.
Okay, here we go.
I'm going to ask you a question even more. At one point in the kitchen hall, there were 13 of us. And and one by one, they quit because they were hired to be writers on local TV shows or Second City. And the losers that were left were the five of us. And it's not that we were funnier than the other people. It's that when finally there was just five of us, we had the right chemistry. But Gary Campbell, he was in the troupe. I thought he was going to be the most famous guy ever. And he's a big, big writer up in Canada and the States. Frank Van Keeken was brilliant. Frank Van Keeken, he was brilliant. But he quit the troupe. Luciano Casimiri, who I mentioned earlier, he's like a genius. He just suffered from stage fright. Wow. So there were guys in the troupe. I hurt my knuckle. There were guys in the troupe. Yeah, thank you.
There you go.
There were guys in the troupe who were at least as funny as us, if not funnier. It was a golden period in Toronto in the late 80s. And now your next question. I'm sorry.
I was just gonna ask about the what. Do you have any secrets or any big news about the Invader Zim movie? Is there what's going on with that?
Well, we recorded it. It's all recorded. They flew me to Los Angeles. A car drove me to the airport. A car picked me up from the airport. They put me up at a $600 night hotel. I was so afraid I was going to lose my voice. It was a very funny script. They don't want us to say anything about it. In fact, they only gave us our parts of the script. It's like Steven Spielberg or something. And but our parts are very funny. We were around some of the other parts. Like Zim is in every scene. So we saw some of his parts. What's Zim's name, Richard? Well, he's great.
I should know this, but I'm also drawing.
But it seems like it's going to be a real funny thing. Should I do a spoiler alert?
Do it.
Yeah?
Do it.
Does anyone not want me to do it? Okay. And it's not even a big spoiler alert, because this happened in the TV series and it didn't really matter. But the characters that Wally Wingert and I play, Purple and Red. You sure you want me to do this? We die at the end.
You still want him to do the spoiler alert? Yes.
I said spoiler, but we died many times in the TV show and came back, so I'm sure it doesn't mean anything.
It's like the Venture Brothers. It's like you keep bringing people back.
You don't know how many times in the TV show and this movie that we did that that my character dies going into the sun. You don't know how many times I did this.
Are you sure the studio's okay with you doing that yell? Like, I feel like that would be
used to be
some kind.
It's the same guy that did the Zim 16 years ago, so he knew right away to put the mic away from me.
Yeah.
And filter it.
Has the experience as Pleakley and Lilo and Stitch, has it been similar to that, or is Disney much more, like, is it much, much more, like, contending with a bunch of Disney suits or something like that? Is it any different?
It's different, but it was also great. It's different. Nickelodeon, I'll give you a boring example. Nickelodeon wants all the cast in the room because they want you to play off of each other. They like ad-libbing and stuff and the chemistry thing that happens. Disney does the thing that Walt Disney invented. It's one person in the room by themselves for days. And then when they're finished, they put another person in. You just do one line at a time. You will do one line for an hour. You will do it like a million ways, and then they have this wonderful buffet, and you eat for another hour. And then you do another line for another hour. But Invader Zim, like I went through like a 90-page movie script, and we were done in an hour. We do a scene, and then we do a scene twice, and then if there's any pickups, we'll do that, then move on to the next scene. But it's totally different. But Disney was great. Great, that sounds so phony. Disney was actually great. The two directors, one of them was a guy from Ottawa, and he was a Canadian, and he was obsessed with one of the scenes that one of the sketches I did in the Kitson Hall. I forget what it's called, but it's a boring title. It has nothing to do with The Hard Day, where Dave Foley plays an alien. Well, he's a guy in an office, and another guy says, "Well, that's funny, your tie is tucked outside of your jacket," or whatever it is. And Dave says, "So what? It doesn't mean I'm an alien." And the other guy says, "I didn't say you were an alien." He's, "They're on to me. Blow up the planet. Blow up the planet." And then I'm his boss, and I have a big stupid space helmet on. And I'm his passive-aggressive boss. I started talking him into, "Do you want some space coffee? Would you like some space tea? I like, you've blown up a lot of planets lately." And, "I just want to talk about it. Is there a reason why you're blowing up a lot of..." And that's what they wanted me to do for Pleakley and Lilo and Stitch.
Was there ever a were there any sketches like that like Kids in the Hall that people bring up to you so much more than any other, or is it pretty even across the board?
Yeah, we all have one. Mark has two: Crushing Your Head and Chicken Lady.
Right.
Scott has Buddy Cole, of course. Dave has a million. Bruce, you know what? Of all the brilliant stuff Bruce wrote, the one that Bruce has the most is my pen. But the one that I get is it's called The King of Empty Promises. Why I always promise to do things. I saw let me get the record for you. So you really do that?
Will do.
Yep. And then the next day when I forget, you forgot the records.
Slip my mind.
It's called The King of Empty Promises. And at that point in the series. Norm Hiscock, he used to be in the troupe, and Dave Foley decided to have a writer's block, so we hired Norm, and he was writing with me, Norm, a lot. We wrote a lot of, like, I think good scenes together. And I said to Norm, "What do you want to write today?" And Norm looked at me and said, "Why don't we write about that horrible thing you do to people?" "What horrible thing do I do to people?" "You know, you always promise you'll do something and you never ever do it." So, I laughed. I said, "Yeah, I guess that's true. It's because I'm a child of an alcoholic. I really mean it when I promise, and then I never do it. I'm sorry about not going to brunch tomorrow, but it's really the truth. I have to talk to Paula."
You guys are having brunch?
No, we're not. Because okay.
We were.
It slipped my mind already.
We were, but if you didn't notice, I put a song in the intermission. I put Jay Giles in there for you.
Which one's that?
Love Stinks.
Love Stinks. Oh, I think that's very nice. Yeah. I had a rough morning, but the point is, Norm and I wrote the scene. We wrote it really quickly. We just knew the character that he was going to say, "Will do," slipped my mind. We got that pretty quickly, and we didn't know what was happening next, but we got it pretty quickly, and we never really rewrote it. It's one of those scenes that later when we read to the Kitson Hall, they didn't have any notes. But before that, after the half hour when we finished writing it, I was just going to do it like me. Will do. Slipped my mind. And I thought, you know, I always do that. Why don't I do a different character? And Scott Thompson's writing partner, any Kitson Hall fanatics remember Bellini?
Yes!
The guy in the towel that we poked with the stick?
Yes!
Well, he was Scott's sort of writing partner. Well, Scott really did all the writing. Scott sort of just dictated to Paul. And they'd be in their cubicle, because we just had cubicles in our office, and there'd always be a waft of marijuana smoke coming over their cubicle, and you would hear Scott dictate a joke, and Paul would be typing, and then Scott would dictate a joke, and then all of a sudden Paul would stop, and there'd be a long pause, And Scott said, aren't you going to write that? And Paul would say, no, Thompson. It's shit. And I thought that'd be a fun way to do Will Doom Slip My Mind. So I did it. Actually, I do a bad impression of Paul, but when I try to do impression, it comes out like that. So I did Will Doom Slip My Mind. Paul Bellini thought of he did write ideas and being mean, and he thought of an idea that is a sketch of mine that people like. He thought of the idea, then I wrote it up with him and Norm, that I was big in France. Like Jerry Lewis, did you ever see that, big in France? I remember in France they call me Le Poopy, and I remember... I remember the one joke that Norm and I came up with, or maybe Norm came up with, or maybe Dave came up with, because he came into our rooms a lot, even during his writer's block, and helped us a lot. And it's like an English professor talking about the phenomenon me being Le Poopy in France. And they say, roughly translated to English, Le Poopy means the poopy. I do get Le Poopy a lot, but hardcore kids and all fans. It's Le Poopy!
So... There's a question from a very good friend of mine who's going to be performing shortly, and she said that she everything was so crazy during the workshop today, and she mentioned, if you have a chance to ask Kevin, ask him what is really blowing his mind that's out there now in terms of not even necessarily comedy.
Like, she asked me that already.
I think there's like weirdness with the answer that you got cut off or something, so now is a chance to tell all these nice people what they should be watching.
Well, I think Key and Peele does perfect sketch comedy. I guess they quit, but I think they did...
Did they quit?
I think their show quit, yeah. I think.
Oh, wow. All right.
I think they did perfect sketch comedy. I would call it... This sounds like what Bruce McCullough calls a complissault, half compliments and half insult, but they were technically perfect, way more than the kids in the hall. Everything that can be perfect about a scene was perfect. The characters were perfect. The hook of the scene... was perfect. They always realized the hook. They got it across. The ending, they wrote the best endings. It was always satisfying. When they didn't do like Saturday Night Live where they repeated the joke over and over. When it was time to turn, they did it. They did everything perfect. They did physical shtick really perfect. Like the one where he's trying to, the whole scene is him trying to take the mic off so he can storm off the interview thing. But I think what I like the kids in the hall better is that...
you made slightly more money off of it, I think. Hopefully.
Not really. We're rougher. We're rougher. Just like how Bob Dylan, a lot of what's great about his 60s albums are the mistakes that he made and the roughness that he found. And Technically Perfect is amazing, and it's something I can never do. You saw my act. I like it rough. I like when I like hit my knuckle that I tell the audience that. But that's not putting down Key and Peele, because that I really admire that. That is something I can't do. That's a talent I and the kids in the hall don't have to be technically perfect. But I love Key and Peele. This is I told her even though I was 10 years old now. I loved Flight of the Conchords. I stopped watching TV six or seven years ago because. I got involved with a family in Winnipeg, so but I like Flight of the Conchords and Sarah Silverman show. And now there's so many more new shows. Whitest Kid You Know was a sketch show that I liked. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now I'm the math teacher, Trevor Moore from Whitest Kid You Know. He's a showrunner for a Disney show called Walk the Prank, and I have the recurring part of the math teacher in that, Mr. Dingley.
Nice.
So. You've been very quiet, Moxie.
I've been enjoying all your questions. I mean,
you've been hanging out with him and bringing him to the radio this morning.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And but there has to have been something that you think, or maybe some story that's come up that you think that everyone...
Not every story. I had a rough morning.
No, I'm not going to tell that. I will say one thing. So I told him that I'd seen him perform with the kids in the hall. They tour every five or six years.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been fortunate enough to see a couple of their tours. And how many times do you get parents who bring their children of all ages because of the name of it's Kids in the Hall?
Oh.
Because, okay, so I was in Allentown because I'm from Easton. And so you
Good Billy Joel song.
Right, it is a Good Billy Joel song. And you guys were playing there, and me and the first husband... because I'm going to air my dirty laundry. But we were there, and we're sitting there. We're really excited. We're like, oh, what do you think they're going to do? La, la, la. And all of a sudden, this family of five come in and sit in front of us. And we've got like a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old. And I'm like, do you think that the parents know what this is? And they and he's like, I don't think that, no, I don't think.
Did they leave early?
No, they hung in there. And then Buddy Cole came on.
Yeah, Buddy Cole's always the acid test.
Right, and then I was... Right, because I was like, literally, when Buddy comes on, I went, "This is where it's going to get really awkward. This is where this family's it's either going to make or break this situation." And within 2 seconds of the sketch, he was like, "So I gave Saddam Hussein a blowjob or something along those lines." And literally, the whole row stood up, and the whole row left. Yeah. And we moved down one row, so that was kind of nice. Yeah.
We only saw that once in Atlantic City. They put the contest winners in the front. And it was a lot of older people and some families.
Oh.
And then the first 3 scenes were fine, and the 4th scene, we wrote this in the mid-'80s. We don't mean it to be homophobic. Scott's gay, who cares? That helps. It can still be homophobic. But we thought it was funny to put a gay man like as a like a Danny Boone kind of character. So Scott's dressed like Danny Boone, and we start singing, "Running free, running free, running faggot, running faggot." And everybody in the front row left.
Oh, no! God.
They all left like this, all 40 of them.
How great would it be if he just walked off stage and that was the end of the interview right there?
And I don't think they walked off for the right reasons. They weren't offended because they thought, which we're not, slurring gay people. I think they were offended because they knew what we were doing, that we're making gay people like a hero. I think that's what I honestly think.
So I think you guys have some sketches to perform and some improv to do.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. We should explain what happened today.
Yeah, so do you want to give a brief synopsis?
Yes.
Okay.
After my rough morning, I did a few workshops, and they were all great. But the workshop that pertains to what's about to happen now, it started last night. No, not you. It started last night. We met, and they brought sketches. They each brought one sketch. We read the sketches, and I gave notes. Everybody gave notes, not just me. Their assignment was to rewrite it last night and this morning, to rewrite their scenes. Some people had ideas, and we helped fill out the ideas, me and everyone else in the workshop, and they wrote that. And then we read all the rewrites today, and I picked... we were running out of time, so I only picked 3 sketches. There were a lot of sketches I could have picked, but we picked 3 sketches, and then in the short amount of time that we have left, we rehearsed the 3 sketches. So now, and everybody, even though I only picked 3 sketches, everybody in the workshop is in a sketch. So we're now going to show you the 3 sketches of the workshop. You'll be leaving by 1 a.m. tonight. Thank you very much.
That's not that long. All right.
Hey, thank you so much, Kevin McDonald.
Thank you very much.
For